From the Len de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 15th day of April, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. We'll be joined by Gary Schnittke. Actually, we'll hear a conversation I had with Gary earlier in the week about an article he's posted to the FarmDoc Daily website related to corn production in Brazil. How the second crop corn, or safrinha crop there, has come on over the last half decade, the last 5 years, and become a primary exporter on the world market, only second to the United States, in fact. And we'll kind of explore how that took place with Gary. And then, as we close out our time together, I'll tell you a little bit about the weather forecast, and we'll also hear some excerpts from this morning's interview on our talk show here at Illinois Public Media the 21st with U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. He had some announcements to make of sorts and a look at how he and the Biden administration view agriculture moving forward. You want to stay with us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day at $5.90, down 4 cents. The July at 576 and 3 quarters, 2 and 3 quarters lower. December futures up a penny at $5.12 and a quarter. May soybeans at $14.18 and a quarter a bushel, 8 and a quarter higher. July 8 and 3 quarters higher at $14.11. And November beans at $12.69, up 5 cents on the afternoon. The bean meal at $401.90, $3.70 higher. The bean oil up 65 cents at $54.89. July wheat at $6.55 and a half for the soft bread, up 5.5 cents. And the hard red July at $6.15 and a quarter, 3.75 cents higher for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago down 50 cents at $121.60. Feeders $1.10 lower at $140 and a nickel. And the lean hogs at $103.57 and a half, down the $3 limit on the day. Matt Bennett now joins us from agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, to discuss what happened in Chicago for the day. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell me a little bit about what you've seen this week in Chicago and how today's trade took place.
You know, this week's been an exciting week for sure. I mean, actually, we saw over $6 corn here for the May. Now, unfortunately, we closed down, you know, off of that and down 3.75 on the day or so. I don't know that I've seen final settlements, but regardless, it was, off the high by more than a dime. Now, I think a lot of angst is going on in and around the marketplace due to dryness, not only in the U.S., especially in the Northern Plains, but whenever you get into Southern Brazil, you know, there's just a lot of talk there. We heard that talk last week. I don't think that that's going to be alleviated anytime soon. You know, and I think a lot of folks have come to the realization that any sort of weather issues whatsoever, given the U.S. and the global balance sheet, you know, it's going to cause some issues due to the fact that we're extremely tight, both on corn and soybeans.
Well, so I do have some questions about that. I was thinking about this morning, that if this is a weather-related, and it clearly is, push to the upside, at least for corn, and a lot of it has to do with what's been taking place with the safrinha or second crop corn in Brazil, is it likely to be alleviated by corn planting in the United States as producers are spurred to continue to leave the planters in the ground? And how do producers manage that along with those dry conditions that you mentioned that are taking place in the Western Corn Belt?
Well, it's definitely a complicated thing. I mean, I think a lot of producers, including myself, would like to be rolling currently. Of course, we had some rain over the weekend. Things didn't dry up near as quick as what you'd think. No more rain than what some of us received. I mean, we only had 3/4 inch down here, but it's been cold. And then you look at the forecast, and we're talking really cold temps for next week. And I think there's just a lot of frustration here about, you know, do we go ahead and we wait on it to warm up? Because conventional wisdom tells me whenever we get a warm up, there's going to be a weather change and there's likely to be some storms. And you don't want to plant in front of a storm any more than what you want to plant in cold soil. So there's a lot of things that are going through growers' minds for sure. But definitely what's going on in South America is one of those things that we can't ignore. I mean, if this safrinha crop ends up being a bust of any level, there's no doubt in my mind that we could still plant another 3 or 4 million acres of corn, and we're still going to have very well supported corn prices due to the fact that right now we're really the only game in town whenever it comes to world corn exports. Now, we didn't get good exports this morning. That's part of the reason that the market sold off, and we took a little bit of a breather as far as corn's concerned. But, you know, we saw a few soybean export sales this morning. I think that had a lot to do with the fact that soybeans were able to hang in there.
What are you hearing about China's need for corn early in the season this year, late into last year? There was a lot of talk that China would continue to need a great deal of corn and that it may very well need it more than it does. Soybeans, that seems to have been the case, or at least at this point looks to be the case. Will they continue to buy, and does ASF have any impact on it going forward?
Well, there's plenty of talk about the Chinese feeding a fair amount of wheat at this stage of the game, talking about up to 40 million metric ton in their program. And so I've got to think that sourcing that protein somewhere other than corn is certainly one thing that they want to do. We know last year, starting in the late spring timeframe, they started auctioning off corn out of their government reserves, and they auctioned off over 50 million tons. And then they followed that up with a less than stellar crop. And so I've got to think that the Chinese need the corn, even if they're going to be feeding something else, just to be able to keep their supplies where they want them. They're going to need corn. Now, what we're hearing, you know, we heard early in the week that, oh, maybe they're going to roll a bunch of these sales the next year. But, you know, there was a couple of stories out this morning and some murmurs that, you know, essentially a lot of people in the industry feel like they're actually going to take most of this corn this marketing year. They bought it a long time ago. And typically whenever you try to get out from under a sale, it's whenever the market's gone down, and the market's done nothing but go up. So these would appear to be really good purchases at this time. And I've got to think that in one form or another, they're going to take possession of that corn. They could roll some of it into the next marketing year, no question about it. That would get the trade a little uneasy, I understand. But at the same on the same token, I think that they need the corn, and they're going to end up taking it eventually.
Have you thought about what this might mean if they are simply reconfiguring their stocks, and they may have needed the corn to begin with, but they might need to roll old stocks out, put fresh stocks in. The same thing with wheat and what that could mean going forward. Of course, that would take whatever they have pulled out of the marketplace off of the market, though it will still be on the books.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, first of all, Todd, I do not agree with Chinese corn stocks. I don't know that anybody knows where they're going to be at. But when you look at their interior prices this year, at times they're running over $12 in parts of China. That tells me they're running an extreme shortage. You know, what are they going to do, you know, as far as building their stocks up? One thing you got to remember is over the last 5 years, they've actually been burning through way more corn than what they're using. Now, we can't access knowing how much they've got in government reserves or in their stocks. They don't want anybody to know. But one thing we can monitor is what they're producing versus what they're using. And they've been running a major deficit over the last several years. And that's only going to be sustainable for so long. So on the corn side of things, I certainly think they're going to be in the market for corn. And it's not just going to be this marketing year. Wheat, if they're going to go ahead and burn through some of their wheat stocks, they're going to run into the same situation on wheat that they've run into on corn. So I've got to think that protein overall has got a bright future due to the fact that you've got this rapidly expanding economy in China. You know, and obviously we know they want to continue to expand in the pork sector, and they want to get as many pigs as they can. You know, ASF has certainly been a little bit of a roadblock for them, but at the same time, I think they're going to work their way through that. I don't think they're going to continue banging their head against the wall and seeing these you know, these ventures fail as far as the pork goes. I think that they'll get it figured out, and I think they're going to be in the market for protein in a major way.
Where you were there on the home farm in Windsor, Illinois, about 45 minutes or so south of Champaign, Urbana, half hour to 45 minutes, so people have an idea where you're at. You were cautious, as you told us early in our conversation, about maybe trying to get rolling with the corn planter. Will you be putting soybeans in first?
Yeah, I mean, we've already planted over 2/3 of our bean crop. We planted most of those last week into phenomenal conditions as far as soil condition was concerned. You know, and we were definitely up in the air on soybeans. We're still, or on corn, we're still a little bit up in the air, but I do think my personal opinion is I'd rather plant into really good conditions well ahead of a rain than to plant into a little bit warmer situation where we're worried about getting a cold shock event. I guess at this stage, I think whenever we talk next week at this time, Todd, to answer your question, I think I'm going to have quite a bit of corn in the ground by then.
All right. Hey, thank you.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
Be safe. That's Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. In today's agricultural news, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack joined the 21st WILL AM 580's radio talk show at 11:30 a.m. Central Time this morning for about a half an hour and made an announcement of sorts as it's related to the Conservation Reserve Program when he was asked about CRP and whether the Biden administration would work to set aside more of the working lands across the United States.
We're about 4 million acres below where we are authorized to participate and to provide opportunities in CRP. It's something that I think we're going to be addressing in the very near future, so he needs to wait for a week or two. But I think he's going to see us respond to that need to create greater opportunities in CRP than before. And to take a look at how many acres it makes sense.
The CRP, by the way, is a land conservation program administered by USDA FSA, the Farm Service Agency. In exchange for a yearly rental payment, farmers enrolled in the program agree to remove environmentally sensitive land from agricultural production and plant species that will improve environmental health and quality. Contracts for land enrolled in the CRP are usually 10 to 15 years in length. The long-term goal of the program is to reestablish valuable land cover to help improve water quality, prevent soil erosion, and reduce loss of wildlife habitat. Signed into law by President Ronald Reagan in 1985, CRP is one of the largest private land conservation programs in the United States. Secretary Vilsack went on during the 21st this morning to talk about precision agriculture, broadband, and sustainable agriculture as it's related to carbon sequestration. That may very well be the next big program that comes out for conservation.
High-speed broadband, you basically open up a wide range of options and opportunities. Farmers in particular need that broadband if they're interested in precision agriculture. If they're interested in eventually taking advantage of carbon sequestration efforts, broadband, the ability to get data about your farming operation, is going to be incredibly important.
Broadband is part of the infrastructure package the Biden administration is currently pursuing on Capitol Hill, and as the secretary alluded to, it opens the doors, he believes, for rural America to have a stronger economy, especially as it's related to sustainability and potentially to carbon sequestration and other issues.
It's a welcome opportunity for U.S. Ag because it's going to create additional revenue streams that farmers don't have today. Let me give you a couple of examples. When you establish a climate, a carbon fund, a carbon market, a carbon bank, whatever you want to call it, you create the opportunity for farmers to be paid for the carbon that they can sequester with climate smart agricultural practices. When you create an opportunity to convert agricultural waste into a variety of bio-based products, you turn a waste product into an ingredient and a product that can be sold, generating more income. When you enable farmers to capture methane and reuse it either on the farm or put it on the grid as electricity, you're creating another income source or reduced costs associated with that farming operation. So it's about really expanding significantly farmer income at the same time doing right by the environment. And farmers understand and appreciate that the market today here domestically and certainly internationally is going to continue to demand more sustainable practices. So it's in everyone's best interest to invest in these opportunities and to take advantage of them.
To take advantage of practices and programs that are yet to be announced and developed. However, the secretary says U.S. agriculture, farmers and ranchers across the whole of the United States are already doing a really good job as it relates to sustainability.
Well, the issue of sustainability, I think you have to understand what American agriculture is currently doing. A lot of folks may not fully understand and appreciate all of the steps that are being taken by American production agriculture to become more sustainable. If we're going to really feed a hungry world, we're going to need animal protein. And the question is, how do we make it so that it is more sustainable? And I think the whole notion of methane capture and reductions, we start there. The ability to create feed additives that reduce methane, the ability to capture and reuse methane, basically reduces the carbon and greenhouse footprint of production agriculture in a way that's positive, that allows you to continue to produce that protein, make it available, but do so in a more sustainable way. The way in which you produce the feed and grow the feed using climate-smart agricultural practices also reduces the greenhouse gas footprint of American agriculture. That's why the president has been so insistent on the net zero emission goal, so that we basically can have sort of the best of both worlds, the ability to continue to have production animal agriculture, but also do it in a sustainable way.
If you'd like to hear the full conversation with U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack that took place this morning on WILL AM 580's The 21st Show, you can do that by visiting will.illinois.edu and looking for The 21st. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. Just click and play from the website, or if you prefer, and you'd like to listen to us as a podcast, maybe through the planter tractor cab and the radio in there, just hook your phone to the Bluetooth radio. You can find us as a podcast in an application like Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, too. Those are directly linked at that bottom of that page at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Take advantage of them if you can today. Now up next, a conversation I had with University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnitke earlier in the week about the rise of Brazil as a corn export competitor to the United States. There's new competition in town for the U.S. corn producer, and it's been coming for really only about the last 5 years, maybe three of the last 5 years, and it's Brazil on the export market. Can you tell me about the development of Safrinha corn there and what that has meant over the last 3 to 5 years.
Corn production in Brazil is growing. It was 4,290 million bushels last year. And a large portion of that, almost 80% of it, was from Safrinha corn, which is second crop corn. It generally follows soybeans, and that has been where the big growth in corn production in Brazil has been. Overall, first crop corn has been stable to declining since 2001. So there was 1.1 billion bushels produced in 2001, and now it's a little bit lower than that, 0.9 billion bushels, but not growing, but Safrinha corn is, and that's in Mato Grosso and several other places in close to the tropics and follows the soybean crop.
Yeah, so just by comparison's sake, 14.2 billion bushels of corn produced in the United States last year. Expectation out of Brazil this year is 4.29 billion or 4,290 million bushels of corn. How does it compete on the world marketplace?
Currently, Brazil is the second largest country in terms of exports. We had 2.5 billion bushels projected for 2020-21, and Brazil has 1.5 billion. That is almost doubled since 2016. And again, that's largely due to the increased Safrinha corn crop, or that second crop corn. That is the type of corn that's growing in Brazil and will likely continue to grow, particularly if we continue to see strong corn prices. And then there's also the third crop corn that's coming along as well. Still very small, but third crop corn is another possibility.
Yeah, so if I remember correctly from the article, it's 73 million bushels, so it's really small.
Yeah, it's really small. So 73 million. So it's really small, but it's one of those things that could grow. And again, we expect Brazilian corn production to continue to grow. That second crop corn will likely continue to grow with strong corn prices, increased demand from China. And if they ever get their transportation system working well, it will grow considerably.
Couple of notes. Second crop corn makes up, I think, 76% of the Brazilian corn crop total at this point. That third crop, interestingly enough, would be harvested, even though this is in South America, at the same time that the United States is in the middle of its harvest season. So could be some competition, I would think.
That's correct. And we can continue to see Brazil compete with us in soybeans and most likely corn in the future.
USDA, in fact, says that in their long-term outlooks.
That's correct. I mean, that's not an unknown. We know that Brazil is going to grow in both soybean and corn production.
Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago is out of the office again this week, so I'll bring you a quick update of what weather across the Midwest looks like. However, let's start with soil temperatures in the state of Illinois. As late as last week, soil temperatures across the whole of the state had risen above 50 degrees. That's the mark that most producers use when they're looking at planting decisions related to corn. And this week, those numbers have dropped. In fact, the far most northern tier of counties, only about 40 to 41 degrees at this point. And from that second tier all the way down to the Shawnee Forest, the bulk of the state of Illinois now between 45 and 49 degrees. It's only those counties that are in deep southern Illinois that are at 50 degrees or above and just barely even there. Now let's take a look at the weather conditions. They're not likely to bring the temperatures up very much because the daytime highs over the next week in Springfield, Illinois, will only be in the upper 50s until we get to maybe Monday. There will be a 70, but back down to 50 again by Tuesday. And the lows will remain around the 40-degree mark, mostly in the 30s. And by the time we get to the end of next week, we'll drop down to the lower 30s. In Iowa, kind of the same thing, about 45 to 55 degrees for the coming week. The lows in those upper 30s to mid 40s. That should keep soil temperatures down. And in Nebraska, where the second largest corn crop, rather third largest corn crop in the nation is raised, by state that is, they'll have highs this week in the mid-50s. Next week, the same thing, and their lows remain in that same area, around 40 degrees throughout the week. And the coldest part of the Corn Belt will actually be in Fargo, North Dakota, where their highs are mostly in the mid-40s and lows between the upper 20s to the mid-30s over the next week or so. And that wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.